Welcome to Lifelines Radio, a production of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. I'm your host, Maria Gallagher, Legislative Director of the Federation. With us today is Advocate Melissa Oden. Welcome, Melissa.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's good to have you with us today, Melissa. Now, for those who are not familiar with the term, what is an abortion survivor?
That is such a great question, because the longer I'm involved in the pro-life movement, the more I learn that most people really don't know what that means. So an abortion survivor is simply a baby who survives any attempt to abort them, Maria. So it may be, you know, someone who survived an attempt to abort them before Roe versus Wade was legalized. I was just talking to a group of eighth graders about this morning. You know, I know people who survived coat hanger attempts to abort them, back alley abortions. We saw babies surviving abortions like me during Roe versus Wade through various types of abortion procedures. And then we still have babies surviving abortions today after Roe was overturned. So an abortion survivor is simply a baby who survived an abortion. They could be in utero right now after surviving an initial attempt, and their life might still be hanging in the balance, or they might now be 80 years old after surviving an attempt to abort them.
And do we have some sense of how often this happens?
That's also a good and very important question. You know, I think no matter what people believe on the issue of abortion, I think everybody should want an answer to this question, because we're told, aren't we, Maria, that, you know, well, this doesn't happen and we don't need to have any kind of laws to protect these babies who survive abortions. Well, have the people who are saying that actually ever questioned what states report out and how many are identified in those states and what's happening to them? So what I can tell you is we only have, you know, really about 10 states where survivors, babies who survive abortions, are being reported out routinely. But we know that those reporting requirements are not uniform, and they're not, you know, really being protected. So like, think, for instance, Minnesota. You know, Minnesota has been reporting out their survivors for a number of years now. And we know that they are looking at a law being passed in Minnesota that would stop the reporting and the requirements to ensure that babies like me are provided medical care. So what we do know a little bit about data, some of it comes from the CDC. So people can look that up. Really, the best place is the Abortion Survivors Network's website. So abortionsurvivors.org. And on that, you can see more about data. So whether it's the CDC, who we're identifying in one really small subset of data, so babies who had survived abortions and ultimately died, and they were looking at death certificates, you know, they definitively said in that subgroup that they could identify 143 that they were sure were abortion survivors. But we also know that there are pockets of data that are super important to us. So in the United States, we don't even know how many abortions are being completed, because states like California, some out east, aren't reporting their numbers. So if we don't know numbers, we don't know survivors. But in Canada in particular, and even Australia, and then you see a few reports out of the UK, Canada and Australia with socialized medicine have some pretty firm data, the firmest you can have on this issue. And so at the Abortion Survivors Network, our research associate took that data, correlated it to the United States. And based on that, people can see on our website in the last reporting period, if you correlated that data, and it's sound, it's good to look at. She can bullet it out by state, county, all those things. It looks like 1,734 survivors in the United States in 1 year. Now, what I caution people to understand, Maria, is that that is what we can correlate off of that data. And that would be an underreport, because that doesn't include states like California, where we don't know how many abortions are being completed. It doesn't include attempts to abort a child at home. It doesn't include chemical abortions. And so we know the number of chemical abortions is very, very high. And so there are survivors of chemical abortions. We're working with their moms. We're hearing from them regularly. And it also doesn't include abortion survivors who are babies who are going through successful abortion pill reversals. So we know that there are hundreds of babies who survive reversals every year as well. So the number is way higher than 1,734, but it is consistently around that 1,800 mark year after year. And interestingly enough, if you look through that research, Maria, that 0.21% failure rate out of Canada matches up with the same failure rate in Australia.
Amazing. Now, what is the Abortion Survivors Network?
The Abortion Survivors Network is a pretty new organization. I can say that when people kind of go, wait a minute, I haven't heard about it. Well, we are pretty new within the last 4 years. People tend to know that I've been involved in the pro-life movement for about 15 years now. But over the years, everywhere I went, I would hear from somebody who would whisper their story to me, or a mom who was looking for support after an abortion had failed or was stopped or she reversed it. And over the years, I knew that there was more that we needed to do in the pro-life movement. You know, we've done a wonderful job of supporting women in need through pregnancy centers and other organizations. We have such powerful awareness campaigns like Silent No More, who have come alongside women like my birth mother. But we never had anyone that was serving abortion survivors and families who are in need of support after an abortion has failed, reversed, or stopped. And so we do a lot at the Abortion Survivors Network. First of all, we do a lot of awareness and outreach so people can understand that this happens and what does this mean. And we do research so that people can start to get a better look at the incidence of failed abortions. We're going to be engaging in research so people can understand what the long-term impact is on women and on children and on families. And so we can have supports. You know, I truly believe this is what a culture of life looks like, is identifying the problem and then seeing how we can come alongside people. So it's one thing to be aware. It's another thing to do something to support people. So we provide a lot of research, a lot of information, and then we come alongside people. So, you know, we serve women who have experienced a failed or stopped or reversed abortion. And they have questions, right, of what next? I'm still pregnant. What have I done to my baby? What does this mean for my life, my health? How do I tell my baby someday, right, when they're growing up? Should I ever tell them? And really, we help connect those moms with other moms who have been through it. Because everybody who's been through something feels like they must be the only one. Mm-hmm. And so there's something powerful to simply say, you are not alone. You are not alone, mom who has experienced an abortion like this. You are not alone, survivor, for surviving an attempt to end your life through an abortion. So we support moms. We provide that community and peer support so they know they're not alone. We walk alongside both biological parents and adoptive families as they're wrestling with what is going on in my surviving child's life. How do I create a roadmap for medical and mental health care, and how to tell them their story and when and why. We come alongside young survivors. So we work with 5-year-olds, we work with 10-year-olds, we work with 17-year-olds, so they can know their story and not experience shame. And that's a process, because we live in a culture that has been so impacted by abortion and Roe versus Wade in particular, that survivors see and hear everything, even these little ones, and it has this great impact on our self-esteem and our self-concept. So we work with young survivors, and then we work with adult survivors who need healing support, who need community and peer support, and who need outlets to turn their pain into purpose. Not every survivor is pro-life. Not every survivor is ever going to share their story, but they desperately want to do something with it. And so we're here for them as well, to give them an outlet and opportunity for their voice to be heard and for them to make a difference.
That is so remarkable. How did you come to discover that you were an abortion survivor?
I am one of those survivors who wears kind of two different shoes. So I have an abortion survivor shoe and I have an adoptee shoe. So I think a lot of people tend to be surprised that we have found most survivors are actually raised in their biological family. And certainly that's through, you know, we've now connected with over 650 survivors, but we know that that's a drop in the bucket compared to the thousands of survivors every year. But I would say we have every reason to believe a lot of survivors don't know their story because families keep it a secret, right? They're not sure how to talk about it. They're afraid of how the survivor is going to respond. Certainly, I think we can understand that a mom raising her child after her failed or stopped or reversed abortion is thinking, man, I don't want them to ever know. So a lot of survivors don't know. And then a lot of families just need support in how to have this conversation. You know, there was nobody, Maria, back then for my mom and dad. I was placed for adoption after I survived a saline infusion abortion. My mom and dad were told, you know, they weren't really sure how long I might live, if I would suffer from multiple disabilities. And my mom and dad loved me unconditionally, no matter what. And like so many parents, they simply thought, we don't want her to know this. We're going to raise her to know that she's loved, and not just by us, but by her birth family. And when I was 14, it accidentally came out because my older sister, who's also adopted, was considering an abortion when she was pregnant as a teenager. And so our parents told her my story, hoping that she would understand the impact that an abortion has. And so, you know, she ultimately chose life for him. He's now over 30 years old. He's an amazing man, amazing father. And, you know, I'm grateful because I don't think there's any other way my parents would have had that come to light, because there's just no easy time that you pinpoint and go, yeah, now might be a good time for that conversation.
Absolutely. Now, how do you respond to those who say that surviving an abortion is exceedingly rare, or who seem to deny it? Because I know I was a journalist, and I never heard the abortion industry talking about people who survived abortions, period.
Right. Yeah, I often say we're sort of this best kept secret, even in the pro-life movement, right? People in the pro-life movement tend to know that this is a thing. We talk about it. We make policy based on this being an incident, but we have lived in the shadows for a very long time. And when you know that A, it's a painful story, B, you're raised by and large in a biological family and there are secrets that are kept, or there's, you know, expectations on you not sharing your story. There's just a lot of reasons why we haven't seen and heard survivors' voices. And certainly when there's nowhere, before we came along, there was nowhere for people to go. There's a lot of reasons. And, you know, interestingly enough, the abortion industry and lobby, you know, they've been at policy hearings that survivors are at. I mean, I've been at them over the years. And, you know, I'll never forget, it was back in 2015 when, you know, federally, there were subcommittee hearings on whether Planned Parenthood would be defunded. And so Gianna, Justin, and I were there together. That was the first time we had two abortion survivors testifying together in a congressional hearing. And here we are, right? Like in this hours-long hearing. And it was 1 or 2 weeks later that the then president of Planned Parenthood showed up and they asked her point blank, have you ever heard of an abortion survivor? Do you deal with failed abortions and baby surviving abortions? And right, Cecile Richards' comment was, well, I've never heard of such a thing. And I think fascinating. I mean, did people not help you prepare for today by telling you what happened in recent hearings? We know that they've known. And sadly, we also know that because abortionists themselves have talked about it. They've talked about it for decades. If people want to go and look up the Dreaded Complication series, that came out of the Philadelphia Inquirer in 1981. That was up for a Pulitzer Prize. It is a hard read, really hard read, to come face to face and read the stories of babies like me and those that we serve at the Abortion Survivors Network who survived abortions. and weren't always provided medical care. And the reason why, Maria, it's called the Dreaded Complication Series is because in that set of interviews, an abortionist called us the dreaded complication. So that's what the industry has called abortion survivors for decades, the dreaded complication. And even a doctor, Dr. Willard Cates, who's associated with the CDC, he's on record saying decades ago, well, I mean, it's like, why would you, you know, turn yourself into the IRS for a tax audit? Why would we want the public to know about this? I mean, you can read that full comment. It is fascinating. And so that is why people don't know, because the abortion industry and lobby doesn't want people to know, because, oh my gosh, what if people knew that babies survive abortions? What would that tell us about the practice of it and the humanity of every preborn child?
Absolutely. You're listening to Lifelines Radio. I'm your host, Maria Gallagher, the Legislative Director of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. With us today is advocate and abortion survivor, Melissa Oden. Melissa, I imagine that when you discovered you were an abortion survivor, there were a lot of emotions that bubbled up. And I'm wondering how you dealt with that, how you found healing, forgiveness, recovery.
People have a lot of questions, not only about how does this happen, how often does this happen, how do you find out? And then the question is, so how did you feel? And, you know, every survivor is different in terms of their experience, right? Even from what type of abortion attempt they survived to the gestation and what the long-term impact has been. And we're also very different in terms of how we find out and what life is like. But I can tell you across the board, what we find is that survivors have a very similar response, which is shock. And yet at the same time, right, kind of this aha moment where they go, oh, the way I've always felt or seen myself relating to my family or to the world makes a whole lot more sense. A lot of survivors often say, right, they've lived their lives feeling like they're always on the outside looking in. And so when they finally realize, oh, right, I survived an attempt to end my life in an abortion, and it affects me. We know that stress in the womb affects babies. We saw this a lot in the pandemic as they were talking to women. So we don't get to pick and choose when babies in the womb experience stress. So I always like to educate people, right? When we know women have experienced stress and they're considering abortion, they're being forced or coerced. And so there's that stress. And then the stress of an abortion procedure upon that baby, and then maybe being laid aside and not provided medical care or staying in the NICU for a period of time, right? It's like stress, stress, stress. So to some extent, there is some empowerment that comes in finding out your story, and it makes sense. But I can tell you, it is a very, very painful thing to find out that someone tried to end your life. And, you know, for me in particular, when I was raised to know that I was loved by my biological family, to find out that they tried to end my life first, right? There's this whole dissonance. And you're thinking, how could anybody love me and then try to end my life? And why couldn't I have just been placed for adoption? Why did there have to be an abortion attempt in the first place? And so a lot of it is grappling with the story that you know or that your family knows. And then, you know, ultimately, usually what we find is there's far more to the story than what people realize. But yeah, it is suffering. And you go through this cycle of grief, right, of anger and resentment. And, you know, every survivor is in a different place. Our healing program definitely is about meeting people where they're at, because everybody is kind of all over the board. But by and large, what survivors want is to be able to work through that grief process and be able to be as whole as they possibly can. And so that's been really my labor of love. I healed myself, went through a process of forgiveness towards my biological parents and my birth mother's family that was responsible for so much. I got a degree in clinical social worker and served a lot of people. And I think like a lot of people, right, I was healing myself as I was walking in that journey of healing other people.
Beautifully stated. Thank you. Now tell me, where were you when you found out that Roe versus Wade had been overturned, and what was your reaction?
That is a question I think that we will all remember for our lifetimes, won't we? Where were you when Roe versus Wade was overturned? I was at the National Right to Life Convention in Atlanta with my teenager, and I was actually upstairs in my hotel room. My makeup wasn't done. I was working on a press release for the Value Them Both Amendment in Kansas because I worked on that ballot initiative. And here I was on the phone with a PR person, right, trying to get ahead of what we thought when we thought the ruling was going to come out, and we thought we had a few more days. So here we are fussing over this on the phone, and I'm trying to get ready to give a presentation at National Right to Life, and I have the SCOTUS blog running. And no matter what people believe about abortion, I hope that they can look through the eyes of somebody like me. Roe was my death sentence, Maria. And so I never thought I would see this happen in my lifetime. And I know that there's so much misinformation out there right now about what it did and what's going to happen. But I hope that people can see that that was a day for us to celebrate a wrong being righted in our society, that it never should have been a ruling that came out of the Supreme Court. And so, yeah, I will never forget that moment. And, you know, my teenager was downstairs in a session and she had texted me and she knew. And she said, "Mom, where are you? I need to hug you." And for me, that's what it's about, right? I live every day knowing my children never would have lived if that abortion would have been successful in taking my life. And so for us to be there together, that's always going to be so meaningful.
And I think a lot of us were overcome by emotion and by tears when it happened. I know I started crying and I didn't expect that to happen. I had been anticipating that there would be this overturn of Roe versus Wade. I had been predicting it for many years, but when it actually happened, the tears started flowing.
Yeah, you do. You think you know how you're going to respond, that you're ready for it, that you want it. And then it happens and you go, "Oh my gosh, now what?" And, you know, I think for many of us in the pro-life movement, I think we've been living that out since then, right? Of, gosh, we've been working towards this moment. We've been preparing for it. We've been serving for these decades. And now here we are. And there hasn't really been a break to celebrate.
Yeah, that's true. And in fact, I have found it to be the case that with a lot of pro-life organizations and a lot of pro-life leaders, it's just become busier. There's just so much more going on, it seems.
Very much
so. You find
so.
that to be the case.
Oh yeah, very much so. Yeah, I can't say that I have taken a break. I took my kids on vacation for 3 days in August, if that counts. That was the longest vacation I've had in a while, Maria, if I'm being honest. You know, we have learned a lot, and certainly we know the legislative landscape has shifted, and is still shifting. But I can tell you, even from the standpoint of serving people after failed abortions, we have not had a chance to take our breath. We have had over a 40% increase in the number of survivors, adult survivors, reaching out to us who know that they survived abortion attempts. And we have seen a higher number than ever of women reaching out after their abortions failed, they stopped them, or they reversed them. And by and large, we are seeing a high incidence of women who have taken both chemical abortion pills and they're failing. These are not reversals. These are straight up abortion pills failing. And, you know, what we have found is that because the landscape has shifted and these women are getting these pills easily, and there are these longer windows that these pills are being given, there is not only a greater likelihood of babies surviving both chemical abortion pills, but these women have a larger window of time where people are coercing them to abort again. So once that child has already survived, their life is still in danger.
We have just a couple of minutes left, and I'm wondering if you can tell us, why did you decide to write a book about your experiences?
Why did I write a book? Not because it's a super easy task, Maria, if I'm being really honest. I'm an English major per history, which is like kind of funny when you think about it. You know what? I knew that really more than anything, what I want is for people to be touched and transformed by my story. And so that is not about me, you know, going out and speaking. That is about me doing whatever it takes for people to know the truth. And so that book, my first one, You Carried Me, that came out almost 8 years ago, was a real labor of love to put my story to paper. And my birth mother was a huge part of that. That was not the intention, but that is a blessing. And then my next book, actually, we've been working on this for 4 years. My next book that is written with Cindy Lambert, who wrote Unplanned with Abby Johnson, my next book, Abortion Survivors Break Their Silence, will be coming out in early 2024, where I tell the story of about 10 or 12 other abortion survivor stories, including through the voices of women who have had failed, stopped, or reversed abortions. And we've never had a book like that before in our culture.
Definitely. And we're so looking forward to that. And in the minute we have left, can you tell us, how can people connect with the Abortion Survivors Network?
Yes, whether people have questions about data, policy, or you're somebody who needs served, a family member, a woman, a child, an adult, you can visit us, abortionsurvivors.org. You can find us on social media, send us a direct message. We are just here to be a resource and support to anybody who's impacted by an attempted abortion.
And with 30 seconds left, what are your final thoughts?
You know, I'm grateful for all of you in Pennsylvania who are still fighting. I know the fight is not done. I want to just be an encouragement to say, stay the course, right? We never know the impact we're going to make, even in a conversation or attempting to, you know, work on legislation. So stay the course. We are grateful for you.
Well, thank you so much. And we are so grateful to you, Melissa Oden, an advocate, a mother, an abortion survivor, an educator, and a friend. Thank you very much for being on Lifelines Radio today.
Thanks, Maria.
You've been listening to Lifelines Radio. We've been speaking with advocate and abortion survivor, Melissa Oden. I'm your host, Maria Gallagher, Legislative Director of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. Thank you for joining us. And remember, there is always a reason to choose life. We'll see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.